We're starting today a new series. We finished a series on a generous life last week. And thank you for those of you who participated in the altar service around our planned giving program. I'm not going to say very much more about that. We can still receive further pledge cards from you. Just leave them in the offering baskets as usual. But today I looked at our preaching plan and realised that we spent a lot of time in the New Testament, but rightly so, we should do. But it's also important to look at the Old Testament from time to time. And we're going to do a short series on prophetic voices, I've called it, taken from various Old Testament prophecies and what they can teach us. Not just about what they can teach us about the Bible, important though that is, but what it can teach us about life with Jesus, which is the whole point of being here. But we do affirm that the scriptures of the whole Bible are important. So we're going to spend a little bit of time in the Old Testament. And today we're looking at 2 Kings chapter 5, second book of Kings chapter 5. And reading from verses 1 to 14, the story of Naaman. 2 Kings chapter 5, there's a page number up there if you're using one of the brown core Bibles. And chapter 5, verses 1 to 14. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. You almost want to have one say, "Ah." We understand leprosy these days, but in those days everyone was afraid of that. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now, bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "By all means, go," the king of Aram replied. "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you, so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message: "Why have you torn your robes? Make the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel." So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sends a message to say to him, "Go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed." But Naaman went away angry and said, "I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spots and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I have washed in them and be cleansed?" So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, 'Wash and be cleansed'?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God and stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant." The prophet answered, "As surely as the Lord lives whom I serve, I will not accept a thing." And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. "If you will not," said Naaman, "please let me, your servant, be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry. For your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord." May he teach us from his word today. It's a story of a man who wanted to make a grand gesture. It's a story of a servant girl and a wife who may have wished they had hand sanitizer. Stories of grand gestures and hand sanitizers are with us still. I invite you to watch the screen.
But it's good. I love doing shows in churches and stuff. And I go to a church that's the worship is, because people have different kinds of worship and different types of music, and I go to a church that's pretty expressive. Do we have anybody here goes to a hand raising church? Anybody goes to a church where people raise their hands a lot? Okay. All right, go. Anybody here not go to a hand raising church? All right. I love asking that question. But I don't know, is this church, Assembly of God, you got some hand raisers here? Cool, okay, yeah, that's cool. See, here's the deal. If you want to come visit a church like this or a church like my church with some hand raising going on, don't feel like you got to get right into it if you're not used to it. Just take it slow, okay? And because there's different types of hand raises that we do. And we have different names for them. So I'm going to walk you through real quick the different hand raises that we have if you want to kind of come to a church like this. Say you're coming to church and the music is rocking. You're getting into it. Just start slow. Just put your hands in your pockets. Just a little elbow flap. You're fine. Just okay, ready? When you're comfortable, start slow. Start with the first one, all right? Ready? Carry the TV. That's the first one we have. Go to big screen. Big screen. There you go. Big screen. Okay. Next one's called My Fish Was This Big. My Fish Was This Big. Let's go up. Hold My Baby. Hold My Baby. Mufasa, regular, whatever you want to do. Next one's called Dueling Light Bulbs. Dueling Light Bulbs. Okay, ready? Up to goalpost. You got goalpost. The old original, you got goalpost. Throwing a heartburn, either side. Hands back up. We're doing good. We're high now. Now, the next one is, it's a variation of three of the same themes. It's one-handed. You got pointer, hatchet, schoolroom. There you go. Pointer, hatchet, schoolroom. Push it out. Press it out. Give the Lord a high five. Go for it. A lot of the women, wash the windows. Do a double window wash, whatever you want to do. Now, when you're comfortable with that, go for the big three. Village People, Rocky, touchdown. There you go. Village People, Rocky, touchdown. Where you go from here? You go vertical. Go vertical. Don't be getting all horizontal, freaking out. There's other people. Okay, stay in your space. Don't freak out. We've seen that woman, haven't we? She's a little too free in worship. Brings your own flag to church. Like, all right. No, Jesus loves you, but you're annoying. Put that away. What is that? Is that a javelin? Is that a worship javelin? Put the javelin down. No, I'm not going to. Okay, you just killed the pastor with a javelin. Put the javelin. Is that a throwing star for Jesus? Put the throwing star away. You got to be relaxed in church. We're freaking out about germs all of a sudden. A lot of hand sanitizer in the church these days. What's that all about, people? We used to not care about germs. I used to work in the nursery at my church. We didn't care about germs. Feed those kids goldfish crackers out of a bucket. Throw them out like chicken feed. Like, all right. We didn't care. They survived, as far as I know. But at my church, we got two hand sanitizer stations right by the front door greeters. That is a weird message. People walking in, thanks for coming. You, thanks for visiting. Yeah, you're going to love it here. We love people. Uh-huh, you're going to love it. Uh-huh, yeah. You just have any questions, you let us know, okay? Yeah, we got four services, a traditional, contemporary, a heavy metal, and a reggae. So whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Y'all newly married, four kids? Oh, my goodness, four children. That is because we love children here. We love children. We really do. Uh-huh. Where are you from? Laurel Lake? Oh, my goodness.
You see, Naaman wants to do the whole grand gesture. He's the commander of the army, and he wants to do something big and expressive. And there's this servant girl who's probably thinking that she could do some hand sanitizer around Naaman. This is a story about grand gestures, or actually grand gestures that they want to do, but have to be replaced by simple gestures. It's a story before that of grace encounters. It's a story of gratitude. Before anything happens at all, we've got these powerful people in this story. Here's the king of Aram. Aram is modern-day Syria. They don't get on terribly well with Israel now. They didn't then. Nothing much has changed. Here's the king of Aram and his commander, Naaman. Now, if Naaman's got leprosy in this time in human history, then he's got to be worth having around. Because you wouldn't have someone with leprosy hanging around with the king unless they were someone special. Because they were afraid of people with leprosy and they shunned them and they sent them away. And right down to Jesus' day and even beyond, people were afraid of that disease. So the fact that Naaman's got leprosy, he must be really worth having around. Powerful army commander. So there's the king, powerful people, and Naaman, powerful, has the king's ear, is his friend, almost. But then it's the story of the nameless people. We read that Aram, the raiders, had gone and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she was Naaman's wife's servant. We don't know her name at all. But imagine what her life would have been like. She would have been utterly traumatized. The Bible's very economic with some of the details sometimes. But you've got Israel down there in the south and Aram up there in the north, and the army have come and they have probably killed people in her village. She hasn't just been escorted away. She's been brutally wrenched out of her home and taken to a foreign land and made to serve these people who have done awful things. You can go to some of the museums and you can see how brutal, if you think modern day warfare is brutal, this ancient times warfare was brutal. They killed everybody, they destroyed everything. This servant girl has seen awful things and somehow survived. So Naaman's army have come and they've wrenched her from all that's familiar and she's there serving his wife. This servant girl owes Naaman nothing. She has no reason to wish him good at all. His soldiers have burned down her village, probably, killed her family, probably, personally brutalized her, possibly. She owes this man nothing. And yet she says to his wife, and being the wife of someone with leprosy, that's not without its awkward challenges either, is it? And even the wife of Naaman wouldn't count for very much in the world, and how much less this servant girl. And she says, well, if only he would go and see the prophet in Samaria, he could be healed. It's a grace encounter. We skip over it. But if it's not for the fact that this unnamed, unknown servant girl does something simple just to say, why don't you go and see what would happen? If she doesn't do that, if she isn't obedient to that prompting, then the rest of his story doesn't happen. And with its conclusion, when Naaman takes back the soil because he believes that's how he can worship God in his land, so worship of the true God goes back to Aram, that happens only because this unnamed servant girl, who owes this man nothing, says, why don't you go and see what would happen? A grace encounter. Undeserved kindness. You and I sometimes can be those links in the grace chain for somebody. Ever think about that? The small random act of kindness you do, the small thing, the seemingly insignificant thing you do no one even notices or even remembers. You could be playing a part in someone's grace encounter with Jesus. Ever think about that? The little bits, the small, it doesn't have to be about the grand gestures all the time. It's sometimes just about being faithful in the small things. Another prophet, Zechariah, he tells us not to be despising the day of small things. Don't belittle the day of small beginnings, in another translation. The small, insignificant, simple things you and I do can have kingdom significance. This servant girl doesn't even know where this story will end. And actually, she takes a risk. We talked about risk-taking earlier. She takes a risk. What would happen to her if she says to the wife of Naaman, I'll tell the husband to go to the prophet, and he goes off to the prophet, nothing happens. He comes back angry and has to face her. He wouldn't face her for very long, I don't think. She'd find herself put out of the house at best. She takes a risk for someone to whom she owes nothing at all. It's a grace encounter. It's a grace encounter that means that this story can get kicked off. Maybe for some of us today, you and I could play a small part, an unremembered part in someone's story. A grace encounter that kicks off a kingdom encounter. The people to whom you and I owe nothing. I'm sorry about all the cracks. How's that? This girl takes this risk. A grace encounter with risk. And this story takes place because of it. But Naaman's a grand figure, a grand person. He doesn't just go off to the prophet on his own. He couldn't possibly do that. He's important. He's going to take people with him. He takes people. He takes soldiers. He takes chariots. He takes treasures. He takes a whole entourage. They all go tripping down the road to Israel. Now, the last time these people went to Israel, they came back with servant girls. So I reckon they would have struck some fear into the hearts of people that saw them. Off they go. No wonder the king's afraid. He remembers what happened last time. And Elisha sends a message, I will take care of this. And so Naaman goes and stands with his entourage, chariots. Imagine a presidential motorcade today. Now, if a presidential motorcade came into Cleary Street, they would close off the whole road. A presidential motorcade always includes an ambulance, an operating theatre, hundreds of security people, black limousines. It's that kind of thing, only in the ancient Near East. The motorcade pulls up outside Elisha's house. And Elisha doesn't even bother to go outside. It's that rude. At first glance. And maybe Elisha's teaching Naaman something else, not just about healing from leprosy. But imagine if the queen came to visit your house and you pretended not to be home. I know some of you, fervent Republicans might well do that. But they'd be like that. It'd be like someone that important turns up at your front door and you pretend you're not in. No wonder Naaman is incensed, because he doesn't just look like he's been slighted by Elisha. He doesn't care about that. He cares about the people he brought with him who are looking. It's like, right, lads, we're going to go down to this prophet. I'm going to get healed. You're going to see amazing things done. The prophet's going to tell me to do something amazing and really hard and difficult and heroic. And I'm going to do something heroic. And I'm going to earn my healing. And all you guys who hang out with me are going to see that and you're going to be impressed. And actually what they see is the great Commander Naaman standing there. And there they are watching. You can imagine the motors are still running or the horses are doing what they do. And they're watching. These soldiers probably didn't want to go to Israel either. They've been dragged down there. And there he is, not even getting an answer at the door. Utterly humiliated. When we play to the crowd, you see, we run the risk of eventually looking a bit small, don't we? I think that's why Naaman's really angry. It's not because the prophet didn't open the door. It's because all his underlings saw that happen. The great general has been slighted by this Israel's prophet. Well, the least we can do now is burn the village down, right? No. Thankfully, there are some other unnamed, small, insignificant people in the story who reason with him. If he had asked you to do something impressive, he would have done it. But he's asking you to do something simple, and you're too proud, too much taking yourself too seriously to do the simple thing. Okay, well, we can laugh at worship styles, and some of us like to do the whole flamboyant thing, and some of us like to do the quiet thing, and that's okay because God, frankly, smiles at most of it in our attempts to try and do what's right in his presence and accepts us when it's in the heart. Naaman has to learn, you see, it's not about the grand gesture, it's about what's in the heart, it's about the heart of obedience. Naaman has to learn, it's about the heart of simplicity. Naaman has to learn, it's about doing the small thing that will make the big difference. Naaman, whose whole life has been about doing heroic things, big things, impressive things, cannot fix himself for all of that. And can only fix himself by doing a small thing. And then he gives glory to God when he realizes it was nothing to do with him. God is at work in the small things, in the seemingly insignificant things. Some of us need to stop chasing the mountaintop experience. A year ago today, we were in London for the Boundless Congress, and some of you watched that on the screen, I think, here. A lot happens in a year. A year ago, we knew we were coming here, but the government weren't allowing me to, or were taking their time with visas. Immigration was an issue 12 months ago, not just in the federal election. They let me in eventually. 12 months ago, we were at the Congress, thousands of Salvationists, Founders Day, flags, bands, marching, the big meeting, the general. Well, sometimes we need those big mountaintop experiences, and it was good. But real faith, real spiritual growth doesn't happen in the big mountaintop grand gestures, does it? It happens in the everyday. It happens in the everyday walk with Jesus. Some of us are so busy worrying about the next mountaintop experience, the next spiritual high, that we can overlook that it's not about what happens here and about here when we get the next spiritual high, but it's about the everyday slog through normal everyday life, the everyday walk with Jesus. That's where the growth happens. That's where the maturity happens. It's not always about the grand gestures. It's not always about the big thing or the grand thing. Sometimes it's just doing everyday life, doing it intentionally with Jesus. That's what simplicity is about. Not always looking for the next big thing, the next big moment. Some of us need to get started with Jesus. Some of us need to stop chasing those experiences. Some of us need to get away from the grand gestures and embrace simplicity. All of us need to dig into the everyday stuff of building a life with Jesus that's about discipleship. We can still talk about holiness in the Salvation Army, can we? We should, you know, we should. I am convinced that we can talk about the decline in our army all we like, but we should be talking about a restoration of holiness. And not just talking about it, but doing it, living it, discovering its depths. That's where the real work happens. It's in the everyday journey with Jesus, the everyday walking in the dust of the rabbi. That's what it meant when they walked with their rabbis. They would walk, their disciples would walk so close, they didn't miss a thing that their teacher was saying. They got literally covered in the dust of the road that was kicked up as they walked along. You and I need to be covered in the dust of Jesus because we're walking that closely that we're not missing a thing that he's got to say. And it's in the everyday walk that spiritual life and growth happens. That's where we discover resurrection life, resurrection possibility, fullness of life. It's not always about the next big thing, as important as they are. Be careful of that. It's not about how great your church is. It's about how real your heart is. Get a church full of people who are taking their walk with Jesus seriously, and you won't worry about how great the church is. You won't need to, because it will be full. Naaman has to learn it's not about the big gesture. It's about doing the small thing. Luke chapter 10 tells the story of Jesus. He sends out the disciples. They go out on a mission trip, or they go out in twos. Read it in Luke chapter 10. And they come back and they're really excited and they've done great things. They've seen miracles worked. They've seen demons cast out. And they come back to Jesus and he says, "Well, how'd it go, lads?" And they say, "That was fabulous. We saw people healed and we saw demons cast out and everyone was afraid when we even used your name. Even the demons obeyed us when we used your name." And there's Jesus. He's excited for them. Of course he is. But he says, "You know what? The most important thing to get excited about is not that the demons obey you when you use my name, but this, that your name is written in the book of heaven. That's what you should be excited about. Everything else just comes out of that. The real thing to be excited about is the fact that you're walking with Christ. That's the grand gesture that matters." It's about grace encounters that lead to grand gestures that don't need to be that grand, which inspire gratitude. Another story in Luke's Gospel, chapter 17, more lepers, 10 of them. Jesus tells them to go and do something simple as well to get healed. Just go show yourself to the priests. But actually, that took quite a lot of courage. If you're a leper in Jesus' day and you're told to go show yourself to the priests, because the one thing you did if you were a leper in Jesus' day is show yourself to a priest, because that would have bad consequences for you. So they had to take a step of faith, and they did that, and they got healed, but only nine of them never went to say thank you. 90% of people who are healed by Jesus don't say thank you. I reckon that stat's about right still. Thank you, Lord, for saving my soul in the band's ministry. Naaman lives in a world where people do not do things for nothing. He may even have been suspicious of the servant girl's motives in the first place. He can't imagine this prophet would heal him for nothing, but that's how it is. A grace encounter that inspires Naaman's gratitude, and one where he learns he cannot pay for what he's received. Naaman's gratitude has to be expressed in simplicity. None of his treasures were acceptable, just his sincerity. Same is true for you and me today. That servant girl, unnamed, unknown, long forgotten apart from in this story, couldn't possibly have known what would have happened in that encounter. But she extended grace to the person to whom she owed nothing. And because of that, a kingdom encounter happened. So the question today is, whose life's going to be changed because you and I make a choice to extend grace to someone who we don't think deserves it? How are we getting on with our everyday Christian walk? Are we stuck chasing the next spiritual high, the next great meeting, the next great thing, whatever it might be? Or are we really growing seriously, taking life with Jesus seriously, because he takes life with you seriously? A whole life discipleship in which every moment is an act of worship and every conversation can be a consecration. Maybe like Naaman, you're trying to do some deal and buy God off in some cosmic deal of reciprocity. You do this for me, I'll do that for you. Grace isn't like that. It comes to us as people who deserve nothing. People with no qualities that a holy God would desire, except that he has an extravagant love for the people he created and a deep and desperate longing for you and I to come home to him. And all that we want to do for him is response to that grace and gratitude. So today, may you and I learn the lessons that Naaman had to learn. Keep it simple. Simple grace encounters, simple obedience in small things, and simple gratitude to a great and awesome God who looks at you and rejoices over you with joyful songs. Lord bless you.